New recommendations about what to do with foreign agents influencing politics around the world. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. This week, the Senate Intelligence Committee is reportedly going to look at efforts to influence U.S. elections through social media, such as Twitter and Facebook. There's some coordination here with British officials, where a committee in the U.K. Parliament has just come out with a report about foreign interference of this kind. The British report calls for new regulation of media companies and a new tax. Let's bring in the BBC's Tony Bonsignore from London. Good morning.
Morning.
So what did this committee find about Facebook's behavior and the spread of, I don't want to say fake news, I want to call it propaganda?
I think there's three essential elements to this. The first one was a broader analysis and pretty grim analysis, really, of what the current state of news coverage on social media. The second point, how the tech companies have engaged with this particular investigation by this particular group of MPs, or failed to engage, shall we say. It seems that the social media giants weren't really keen on telling these MPs about what they were doing. And the third part of it is, well, where do we go from here?
Well, as U.S. officials wrestle with some of these same issues, it's interesting to reflect on some of the things that Parliament is considering as a remedy. Does this committee have some suggestions?
It has a number of suggestions. So, for example, the committee says that electoral law needs to be updated to reflect the new modern world. It's talking about a tax on social networks to pay for digital literacy programs in schools, a code for political advertising on social media, because one of the complaints was these adverts were being fired to us all directions on social media and we didn't know where they were coming from. And we often trust the news on social media because it's being referred to us by friends and colleagues, which makes it even more important to understand where it's ultimately coming from. So more transparency, and then talk as well of a digital Atlantic charter to protect personal information and rights.
BBC business reporter Tony Bonsignore in London. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Among the British recommendations, forcing social media companies and their ads to carry an imprint listing who paid for the ad. The trick isn't coming up with a digital imprint. The trick would be verifying who really paid. Recently elected Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte will meet President Trump at the White House today. Trade and tariffs are set to come up. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
Despite trade tensions between the U.S. and Europe, Giuseppe Conte and President Trump have gotten along. Conte doesn't have a lot of power over tariffs. The European Union controls that department. Joel Trachtman teaches international law at Tufts University. He says Conte may want to stay on the president's good side. Trump's already slapped tariffs on steel and aluminum.
He might decide to do the same thing with autos, which would be a much larger band of tariffs. And that would be damaging to Italy.
To the tune of $866 million. Charles Kupchin worked for the National Security Council under Presidents Obama and Clinton. He says Conte and Trump have a few things in common. He characterized them as anti-immigration and pro-Russia.
And so I think in President Trump's mind, this meeting offers an opportunity to forge a united front of sorts of right-wing populist leaders.
But then there's NATO military spending. Trump wants European countries to spend more. Italy plans on spending less. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is down 0.2%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong ended down 0.3%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed. The 10-year Treasury yield is getting close to 3%, 2.98 now. How will the guardians of interest rates process the Friday news that the U.S. economy was growing the fastest in 4 years? The Fed meets tomorrow and Wednesday.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
There are more than 14 million children across the country living below the official poverty line. That's from a fresh study from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Among details from that study, a finding that Utah is doing more than any other state to reduce its poverty rate. Utah is using data to pinpoint poverty hotspots. Marketplace's Renata Sago reports.
Shannon Starley and her team of caseworkers at Utah's Division of Children and Family Services have a tough job. They help decide whether to remove kids from their parents' custody due to neglect, abuse, or
mental health issues.
Starley says she's seen parents lose their kids, get them back, and lose them again.
I mean, it's hard because you have kids who go home and we close the case and we think everything's great, and then a year later, the kids are right back in the same situation they were in before.
Utah is now trying to use data collected from agencies like Starley's to figure out how to help support families. Beyond substance abuse and mental health issues, the state's looking at families that remain in poverty from generation to generation. In 2012, Utah lawmakers mandated that the state get a clear picture of who's affected. Tracy Gruber directs Utah's Office of Child Care.
What we know of families who are experiencing intergenerational poverty is that they are receiving services from multiple agencies.
Gruber says it took 3 years to collect, match, and coordinate data from state agencies that provide everything from food stamps and cash assistance to public education and juvenile justice. The result? Data that show where poverty's concentrated across Utah's 29 counties. The state found that 99,000 kids and adults are living in intergenerational poverty. Laura Speer with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says Utah's taken a unique approach to tackling the problem since 2010.
Fewer children are living below the poverty line. More parents have secure employment, and more teens are in school and working.
In 2010, 16% of Utah kids were living below the federal poverty line. That's compared to 11% now. To get the number even lower, the state's requiring the counties with the highest concentrations of intergenerational poverty to use data to come up with solutions. The Utah legislature's earmarked $1 million to help pay for those county efforts. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. This is from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.